The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer a question from a listener regarding leaving retirement accounts to minor children. We're also going to talk about six IRA rules every bride and groom must know. So welcome to today's show. I'm here with Jim, just the two of us today. That sounds kind of disappointing, but I didn't mean it to sound quite like that.
Yeah, I know. It's like, wow.
It's just bummer. The two of us.
Just Jim, the two of us.
Just the two of us today.
Pete's not here today.
No, and Justin doesn't have anything to say, so.
Oh, he's got plenty to say. We just didn't let him
in the
room.
Other room. So we have
just
a mixed bag, and it actually we're kind of back to the roots of the show, the retirement and IRA show. We deal with a lot of IRA issues, and this the listener's question is a little broader than just IRAs, but would certainly apply. This question is going to apply to IRA accounts. And then this little list of six rules every bride and groom should know is IRA-based as well. So we're back to our
IRAs.
IRA discussions.
Well, last week it was all a retirement discussion, so this week it's an IRA discussion, hence the retirement and IRA show.
Perfect.
And we are not live today. Did you mention that?
I didn't, but now you have, and people know that
we are not
they can't
live.
Call in.
No.
Are we ever going to be live again?
We better be, because we're sorely disappointing our number one fan.
Does your mother prefers our live shows?
Yes.
Why?
Mom is not. I don't know. That's what I
do
tell
Do we
her.
Sound different?
I say to her, you haven't heard the show before, so it's still new to you. But it's just different, she said, when we're live. She just likes it better when we're live. She always asks me, are you live this week? No. Mm.
Maybe we're more entertaining when it's 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday rather than 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday.
I had every intention of being live this week, folks, but I decided to go hiking with some friends. Hadn't been hiking in a while, and I wanted to get out there. And they're doing a fairly easy hike, Potasso Preserve up in Boulder County. So I thought I would go up there with them. Supposed to be cooler weather. Today is Tuesday, but long-term forecast has it only in the very low 80s. So up there at Potasso should only be in the mid-70s. So it should be nice.
Nice hiking weather.
So that's why I decided we're going to record again.
Right up to the point where the lightning storm comes through.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be out by then. Yeah. And then next week we will not be live either. If everything falls into place, we will be bringing a physician on the show as a special guest to talk to us a little bit about the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, which is anything but affordable, and how it has impacted healthcare, both in his practice and in general, and what we can do to perhaps lower healthcare costs. This is for the under 65 crowd. This is not going to talk about Medicare, Medicaid, prescription Parts D, and all these, Part D, prescription drug plan, or anything like that. This is going to be for the under 65 crowd. But he has every intention of coming down. Hopefully he will. And we will be recording next Saturday's show as well, which leaves us, what, just one more Saturday or two more Saturdays?
A couple more.
Okay. Cause
but on the ACA issue, my complaint has always been, a lot of people complain about the Affordable Care Act for a variety of reasons. My number one has been it was attacking a small part of the broad problem. It was really restructuring of the insurance industry, not attacking the cost of healthcare.
No.
Which is where the root of the problem.
And the
root of the problem is there.
That's why it's an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah.
Affordable Care Act. It my premiums have gone through the roof in the 3 years that this has been around.
And people who are blaming the insurance companies.
It's wrong.
Just so you know, when you look, if you look at a large insurance company that provides health insurance, just so you know, the exorbitant profits that they're making are usually only, their profit margins are only 2 or 3%, which is far lower than a company like Apple, for instance. I don't know why people don't point at Apple as the evil empire because they make so much profit.
50, 60%
huge profits. Where an insurance company, it's actually a very small portion.
It's like a restaurant, very small
very
margins.
Very small margins. And to be profitable, they have to be very large, right? So you can make up for these small.
No, these price increases
so
are not being caused.
And I'm not saying insurance companies are infallible, but I think a lot of the blame is misguided.
Well, the cost increases are because of the mandates under the ACA. I opined at the time that these were not going to keep the cost of insurance down, and they haven't. So we're going to hopefully have an interesting discussion next week. I had met this physician the previous week in Boulder. I went to the Boulder Chamber. You know, the Boulder Chamber of Commerce is only called the Boulder Chamber.
Because commerce is a bad word in Boulder.
In Boulder, yeah. Yes. So they actually had to remove the word commerce from the name. So it's just called the Boulder Chamber. Mm-hmm. Because for those who don't know, for those iTunians throughout the rest of the United States, Boulder, Colorado would be the Rocky Mountain equivalent of Berkeley.
So, yeah.
Just not as right-leaning.
Wow, come on. I don't know. It's worse as far as that goes.
It's on par, if not a little bit. More.
Yeah, it's its own little, they march to the beat of their own drum.
Correct.
Down there.
And they make their own drum.
Beautiful place.
Probably out of hemp.
Nice place to visit. Very interesting people there as well.
It is. I actually love
Fine
the
people.
City. I love the city. Mm-hmm. I joke about it, but I am there all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I'd love to meet a nice Boulder woman and date her. First of all, we'd argue politically, but outside of that, I just find they're beautiful people.
Very
so
nice.
If there's a Boulder woman listening.
Yeah, it sounded like
a plea. Single white male. But no, I love going to Boulder. So a few weeks ago, I went to the Boulder Chamber. Mm-hmm. And they have a networking event called Business After Hours. Mm-hmm. And
do they all sit around talking? Do they try to outdo each other as far as how little they make in profits?
I'm just amazed at the amount of pot shops that belong to the Boulder Chamber now. But that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
So anyways, when I was there, I met the physician and we were chatting. Mm-hmm. And he was just fascinating on his attempt to deal with the ACA and a startup that he has created with another physician and PA, physician's assistant, to provide affordable health care to people in Northern Colorado. So it was just really interesting discussion with him. So I want to bring him on. He indicated he wanted to come on. If he can't make it this week, then next week, rather, we'll try to get him on for another week. So should be an interesting show next week, so we won't be live then as well. But sometime between
maybe
then
20th.
And the end of August, we should try to do a live show because we have to give a pie away. We haven't given a pie away for
there's
July.
A lot of reasons to do a live show. That, you know, that is one of them, but not the only. There might be people out there just waiting to call in.
I doubt it.
Okay. Well, if you are and you're really frustrated that we haven't had a live show for you to call, please reach out to us either by calling us, which is an option, or you can send us an email, either one, and we'll kind of converse with you that way and possibly turn your question into a topic that we discuss on the show.
Right. We don't do that enough. We need to, on our little, if you notice, folks, we have these little pre-recorded snippets now telling people to reach out to us. We should make sure one of those talks about, if you have a question, you know, thank you for listening to the Retirement IRA Show. If you have a question, whether you're a Coloradoan or an iTunian throughout the United States, send your questions too. We should start doing that. Mm-hmm. But if anybody wants to email me like this gentleman did, you just email me to jim@jimhelps. That's J-I-M-H-E-L-P-S. jim@jimhelps.com. And you can send your email question and we'll answer it. I do want to apologize to this listener whose email we're going to get to. He sent it to me on June 21st.
That's a long time ago.
It was. And I promptly printed it. You can...
Mm-hmm. I can tell that paper's at least 2 months old.
Well, what had happened is I printed it. And as you know, the printer comes out near Andrew's desk. Mm-hmm. So he apparently grabbed this like he normally does, but for some reason he left it on his desk instead of putting it on the little ledge above his desk where all my stuff tends to go. Mm-hmm. And then I just totally forgot about it.
So you're throwing Andrew under the bus?
I'm throwing him under the bus. Okay. Hell yeah. So now Andrew is in Alaska this week.
So that's why he's the target?
No. You know, let me get to it. So because he's in Alaska this week and he didn't invite me to go with him.
Oh, this is retribution. I get it now.
He knows I love Alaska. But anyways, Justin is filling in for Andrew. Mm-hmm. So Justin is sitting at Andrew's desk.
And found it.
Justin found it. Mm. He said, was this anything of importance? And I looked at it. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, this gentleman emailed us a while ago. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I printed this is I was going to give it to Pete to talk about on a radio show when he was in.
That's Peter Scott. We're dealing with our resident estate planning attorney.
Correct. Well, on the day that I was supposed to give it to Pete, someone who shall remain nameless, but I'm staring right at them, never reminded me to give this to Pete. I got to throw you under the bus, too.
But I'm here. I can defend myself.
Well, I can't be the one held solely responsible for ignoring this man's email.
Pretty much you can.
I can?
Yeah, because he sent it to you.
He did.
You didn't respond.
But everyone else in the office fell through on their assigned tasks. Andrew lost it on his desk. You never asked, Jim, did you get an email this week?
I ask every week.
You didn't ask the week of June 21st?
Apparently. Okay. Maybe I wasn't here.
So anyways, we are a little bit late.
But his question is timeless.
It's a very good question. And I'll have Pete opine a little more on this. I believe Pete's going to try to come back on the show. He's on his practice retirement again for the next 2 weeks. For those who don't know, Peter Scott, who joined the show just a short year ago, he's a fine, and very knowledgeable estate planning attorney, as well as a JD in taxation, and just oogles of experience on business planning as well. He's retiring after 43 years. He said he's had enough, yada, yada, yada. And he wants to retire at the ripe old age or ripe young age of 67. So he's going to be retiring the end of this year, if we ever let him, as he says. But... because of that, him and his wife are going on what he has termed practice retirements. And that's when they go away for a couple of weeks and just practice being retired. And this is another practice retirement phase he's in right now. So he hopes to be back around the end of August and then pretty much until he fully retires in December.
Sounds to me like people are coming up with all new reasons to go on vacation. This sounds like Justin's baby moon thing that he pulled on me last year. What the heck? Well, why don't you just say, we're going to take some time. Baby moon, practice retirement, like practice vacation, the vacation you take before your real vacation. Are they going to come up with that now?
I don't know. He just says this is pre-retirement practice.
Okay.
Okay, so that's why he can't answer this question, but I think he can add a little bit more to it than I can because I am not an estate planning attorney. But the question he asked, I'm quite knowledgeable on, so I'm going to... answer it as best I can, and then I'll let Pete add anything else that he may see fit next time he's on the show. So as we always do with everyone, I have no idea where this man's from. So when I reach out to him today to tell him to listen to this week's show, I will find out where he's from. So I don't know if we can put another star on the United States. I don't know if he's from a state that hasn't reached out to us yet, but we will find out. But as always, we're not going to use his real name, even though it's in here. To protect the privacy of all our emailers, we call them George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, I always love that. That's I'm just such a Looney Tune.
Yeah, I know why you like it.
It doesn't get any better than the Looney Tunes, though.
No.
Not modern cartoons. Okay, so it begins, "Hello, Jim. I recently discovered the IRA show podcasts and thoroughly enjoy them. Thanks for the education. I have one quick question. I have two young sons. I wonder that if something happens to my wife and myself, should we let the boys receive their inheritance right away? They are young and not completely understanding of life and the responsibilities that come with it." Then he goes on to write, "In the will that I created, I wanted everything, my 401k, my IRA, my home, etc., to be liquidated and split between two trusts. I named my sister to be the trustee and the executor." Executor would be of his estate. "My question is, how do I name the beneficiary in my IRA and 401k? Do I name my son's trust or my son's by name? I want to thank you again for your time," and we'll call him George. So I'm sure as I was reading that, Chris, because you hadn't seen this yet, you probably came up with a few uh-oh moments as well.
There's a few issues. The will does not control where the IRA or 401k monies go. So there's one issue, but he then later on in the, I think he realized that and talked about naming beneficiaries
right.
of the
IRA. He got it wrong
the
in the
IRA.
Previous paragraph, mm-hmm. and then he seems to have corrected
so
himself.
So the first thing for people to always remember, there are certain items, generally personal property, that can be controlled by a simple will. Other items are titled in such a way that the titling will affect how they pass. For instance, joint tenancy for real estate, that type of thing. But retirement accounts have their own rules. They have beneficiaries that are designated, and that controls and overrides any will, controls where they go. So if you want to control that, you've got to attack that issue with the beneficiary designation forms. And there are some issues there. We've talked in the past about trusts being set up for IRAs. And trust being named as the beneficiaries for IRAs. And there's some pig pen going on there.
Headaches.
pig pen being the Peanuts character that always has that cloud around them, the cloud of regulations and rules and potential mishaps that can happen. So the first thing, obviously, and you'll probably expand on this, is the trust needs to be designed to be compatible with the IRA.
Correct. And then the very first thing he mentions is, should he leave his assets outright to his sons or not? He feels they are too young, as he put it, mm-hmm. to completely understand life and the responsibilities that come with it. Well, I'm pleased to say most likely the state he lives in has made that decision for him, that you children, minor children, do not inherit the accounts outright. They will be set up as custodial accounts with a guardian.
Right.
So I'm going to encourage him to make sure he doesn't mention anywhere in here. He mentions that his sister is going to be the trustee and executor of his estate. Sometimes people recommend that be two separate people. One person is the trustee managing the assets. Another person is the executor making sure everything follows through on. But if he wants one person to be responsible for both, he can. Couple of caveats on that, though. Make sure the sister really wants to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the sister understands the time commitment that's going to be involved in being the executor of an estate where he's talking about two people dying, his wife and himself at the same time, or in close proximity to each other. So perhaps they're in an accident together or something of that nature. Make sure the sister wants to be trustee and executor. Does she have kids of her own? Does she have a full-time job? Does she have a husband? Does she have other issues that she's addressing and she's not going to be able to do this all on her own? Have contingent trustees and contingent executors named in your will. Just in case your sister can't do it, you're dead and gone. You're not going to know. If she backs out, she's not under any legal obligation. It could go into a little bit of a tizzy because it's going to get stuck in the court system.
Right. And the courts will decide, a judge will decide then who is the custodian of these accounts or the executor if you don't name them. So that's, I think it's always better for you to be the one who's chosen, not just leave it up to the hoping the judge makes a decision that you approve.
Right. Now, he would name the executor in his will, and in the trust document itself, that's where he's going to name contingent trustees. And if Pete is here, Pete can expand upon trust protectors and other language that he's probably going to want to have inside that trust to allow for the proper transition of different trustees. I'll let Pete get into a lot of that nuanced when Pete comes back. But just right off the bat, whenever I see someone saying my sister is going to do this, I think of my own sister. Love her dearly, but she's got a busy woman. She's got a life of her own. She hopes to be retiring soon and living part-time in Florida, part-time in Massachusetts. I don't know if his sister lives right near him or 3,000 miles away like my sister lives from me. I would never name my sister to be executor and trustee for me. She's just too busy. She'd kill me. Well, I'm already dead. She'd kill me again. She'd be very upset if I did that. So just make sure whichever family member you're going to name wants to do it and make sure there are contingents. But also, make sure guardians have been named in your will to raise your boys. I often tell people, if you don't name someone, the state you live in will. And just pick the worst possible family member ever, and that's probably who they're going to choose. Now, as Pete would point out if he was here, naming guardianship is not a lock. The court system still has to approve that. But they think very strongly on who you name in your will as guardian of your children. And as Pete said, they would give strong favor to that person unless other people can come out of the woodwork and make a compelling reason to the courts of why that person shouldn't be guardian. But the courts will give strong credence, as Pete pointed out on a previous show, to whoever you name as a guardian, but it is not a sure thing. It's a probable thing, but not a sure thing. But make sure your will also names guardian. You don't reference that at all anywhere. And now is your sister going to raise your kids and be executor and be trustee? Now you got one person doing too many things. You're going to want to put probably another person in on that.
And some people may be wondering, why would you even consider naming the minors? There can be some benefits to this. For one, since we still have the existence of the stretch IRA, where the person who inherits it gets to stretch out the distributions over their lifespan, leaving it to a young child, that stretches it out for a very long time and causes those distributions to be taxed at that child's tax rate, which before they, if they're young enough not to really have a career job, might be a low rate, as low as zero. So there can be some tax benefits.
Right. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to explain how you go about doing that, because it's perfectly fine to name the child as a beneficiary of an IRA account. A lot of people don't think so. Oh, they're a minor. I'm going to name my mother or my sister. They promised me that they will use this money for my son or my daughter. That is the worst thing to do. There's no problem naming a minor child as beneficiary. You could also use a trust, as this man alludes to. So when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about naming a minor as beneficiary of an IRA, how that works, how the IRA gets set up, because he asks that. How does it get set up? Who gets named as beneficiary? So we'll get into a little bit of that, and then I'm going to get into a little bit about trusts and a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, how that works, and things that he's going to want to look out for. So we'll get into that in the beginning of the second segment.
Perfect. So when we come back from this next segment, or when we come back from this break, as we move into this segment, we are going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which for those of you who have been listening for a while, or maybe you know from some other source, the Social Security started in 1935.
Started in August of 35. Right. It's almost a birthday.
So we're at the 81, 81st birthday of Social Security. And because Social Security is such a large part of most everyday average people's retirements, we talk about Social Security on here a lot. Not only that, we have a dedicated blog to Social Security topics at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So we're going to kind of honor the birth of Social Security musically when we come back from this break. This song that we're going to hear from 1935 features a Cole Porter jazz standard written while Porter was on the ocean liner the Franconia during a Pacific cruise. So it's probably, just as a hint, probably has a Pacific Island flair to it.
Well, at least he wasn't on the Lusitania or the Titanic.
True, or we might not have gotten as nearly as many Cole Porter hits over time. So we'll be back with you right after this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It's one of the top hits from 1935. Heard that before at all? Sounds a little familiar, no? No? Okay. That is Begin the Begin, written by Cole Porter. Although it was popular in 1935, it didn't really take off until Artie Shaw redid it in 1938, and since then it's been covered by many musicians like Perry Como, Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, Dionne Warwick, Michael Bublé. Sorry for Bublé fans, I mispronounced his name. Sorry.
Oh, everybody's done it.
Sheryl Crow even did it. So, very popular. The Begin being a dance that was kind of started back there in the 30s.
Gotcha.
You probably don't do that, a lot of Begin dancing. When you go out,
right? I do not do a lot of Begin because I'm a beginner. I'm not a very good dancer. I have a lot of talents. Dancing is not one of them.
Not one. That's okay.
I would like to learn swing dance. That just looks fun. Yeah. I like the music. And mm-hmm. I often watch the people on the dance floor swinging around and spinning and doing all sorts of funky things. It looks pretty fun.
It's not too late. You can. There's all kinds of little things, and that might be a good meetup kind of thing, too. There's always way more females that show up single to those than males, so you'll be welcomed with open arms.
Not when they see my dancing abilities. With a new guy. I'm not dancing with him. He's holding me back.
Just don't go to a competitive group. How about that?
Let's feel sorry for the new guy.
Well, pity gets a lot of people places.
It does. Gets you a few things. Okay.
So back to leaving retirement accounts to minor children. We dealt with a few issues before, but Jim's now going to expand a little bit on how the trust needs to be set up. Vaguely, we'll leave the specifics probably to Pete, but the trust issues regarding IRAs in particular, as well as how the IRA beneficiary section.
Right, so he begins his email question to us. Again, I have two young sons. I worry that if something happened to my wife and I, should we let the boys receive their inheritance right away? They are young and not completely understanding of life and the responsibilities that come with it. So he begins by highlighting, Chris, that he's worried about his children inheriting his assets right away, and he wants to know if that's right or wrong. I think only a parent can make that decision, but he wants to know if it's right or wrong. But then in the very next paragraph, he goes in to talk about that he created a trust. Mm-hmm. So when you create a trust, you've essentially put a wall between your assets and your beneficiary. The trust kind of stands there as a guard, Pete and I have often said on this radio show, and BP, which is before Pete, BP, I used to always caution people that the main reason for creating a trust is for protection and control. So if he is opening a trust, it kind of nullifies his first question. Should he let his minor children inherit the accounts now? Well, the trust that he alludes to in the second paragraph is going to prevent that. The children will still inherit it, but the trust stands between the children and the assets and acts as a protector to keep the children from making bad mistakes or to keep the assets from being lost to a creditor of the child or a ex-spouse of the child. Now, obviously, these would be older children. He alluded that his children were still quite young. So I'm not quite sure, because we didn't talk to this guy. He only sent us an email. If he's contemplating one or the other, using a trust or not using the trust, it sounds to me like he made the decision to use the trust. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it doesn't matter the age of his children, because the trust will be set up and will have certain rules established by him and his wife during the creation process that will stipulate when the children get the money. Mm-hmm. So he'll be able to keep the children from making bad decisions with it by using a trust. Because remember, people, for protection and control, that's why you use a trust. There is no tax benefits to a trust, and if anything, there's a greater tax cost to a trust. And by that, I am talking income tax. Estate taxes are no longer an issue, as Pete says, for 99.3, or is it 99.7?
Over 99%.
Yeah, over 99% of Americans will not pay the estate tax, because of the new rules that were passed. Now, they could abolish those rules in the future and bring the estate tax back to everybody. But right now, most people, the vast majority of people will not pay the estate tax. But let's just pretend he didn't have a trust. Is it possible, is it okay to name a minor child as a beneficiary of a retirement account? And the short answer to that is yes, absolutely. There's nothing against the law on that. Parents name children all the time.
And you can name, as part of that process, name the custodian instead of allowing the judge of the court system to appoint one. And that would obviously be our recommendation, that you choose the person you think would be best for that position. You can talk to them ahead of time, make sure they're okay with doing that, not let the courts just choose who they might pick, because once again, like Jim mentioned before, imagine the worst possible person to go into that position, and that's probably who the court will choose.
Right, because, and by custodian, Chris is not talking custodian of the IRA, such as the company that's going to hold the IRA. He's talking the custodian of the custodial account that will be opened, because what will happen is a custodial IRA will be opened, where the IRA is open for the benefit of the beneficiary, in this case, one of his children. And when the children reach the age of majority for that particular state, again, I don't know what state this gentleman lives in, then the IRA becomes the child's. But prior to that, there will be a custodian. It could be either a court-appointed custodian or someone he names himself, a family member or a trusted friend, who kind of stands between the IRA that the children inherited and the children. The custodian is kind of doing what the trust does, standing in the way there and saying, "Nope, no, you can't get this yet." Now, the custodian will be allowed to take money out of that IRA, because the child does have to take required minimum distributions. Just because the child is a minor does not exempt them from required minimum distributions. Anyone who inherits an IRA, except for a spouse, there's certain rules there, but this is a non-spouse situation. It's his children that will inherit it. Anyone who inherits an IRA who's not a spouse of the decedent, they have to begin required minimum distributions by December 31st of the year following death, irrespective of their age. So the children can be 3 years old, 4 years old, 8 years old, 13 years old. It doesn't matter. They have to take RMDs. Well, prior to becoming an adult, the custodian would make sure that gets carried out, that the required minimum distribution leaves the inherited IRA and is given to the child. What the child can't do is call up the company that's holding the IRA and say, "Yeah, I'd like to close this IRA I just inherited. Please send me all the money." The custodian is going to stand in there, or the guardian of the IRA. So there will be somebody, either court-appointed or someone that this gentleman names and will become guardian of the children or custodian of this account. And they just make sure that the child takes the required distributions, but no more money than that. But they're allowed to take additional monies out for the health maintenance, because it's the child's money. If the child says, I want to do some of these things, they have the ability to allow that, and they can take extra money out. There's no law that says you can only take the required minimum distribution. But there is no problem naming a minor child as beneficiary of a retirement account. Whether or not it's good, that's a whole other question. And he was kind of asking, what do we think? Well, again, it's a tough call because the child may be a sweet 10-year-old, but grow into a troubled 18-year-old. So it's very hard to look at a child today and say, oh, little Johnny is going to be perfect. I'll leave him this assets. Because little Johnny may not turn out perfect.
And some of this, obviously, is dependent on how large these accounts might be.
Exactly.
If they're not very large, the consequences may not be that significant, and the cost of setting up some of these controls might be excessive for the account balance. But if the accounts are quite large, I think this is a very good conversation to be having between those two spouses about what exactly do they want to have affect these children if both of them are gone. And I can't imagine many people would recommend that minor children be the beneficiaries of a giant lump sum completely under their control.
Reach the age of majority.
As soon as they hit 18 in some states, could be as high as 21, depending on the state. But as we all know who are past the age of 21, it's the rare person who is fully matured at that age. Most are quite immature at that age, especially when dealing with large amounts of money.
Exactly. So the second part of his question jumps right into a trust. And that's why it got a little confusing, because the first part of his question clearly indicates there is no trust. Should he let his children inherit it? If there is a trust set up, then the trust acts as that Chinese wall between your inheritance and your child. And the trust is just a piece of paper. It's paper. And you write on it kind of all the controls you want to put in place on that inheritance. So you can say the child can take it out for this reason or that reason or the other reason. But if this is happening or that is happening, they're to take nothing out of the trust. You can do different things. A trust would be for protection of the assets and control of the assets. So you can control what the child does, and you can protect the assets. You could protect them from someone looking to do the child financial harm, or you could protect them just from the child themselves who may do financial harm with it, especially as an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old that could inherit hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more. That's a huge amount of money for anyone, but especially someone in that age, they may make bad decisions. So that's why we would use a trust. But as Chris said, there's got to be enough money to make it worth it. Because the cost of putting a proper IRA trust together, you're probably getting, and Pete's not here, but I think he would agree, $1,500 plus just to put the trust together.
A minimum $1,500. Yeah. And you made a good point in what you just said, a proper IRA trust. You need to have this trust built with the specific intent of it receiving IRA proceeds, because if it's constructed improperly, you might create a tax nightmare for your beneficiaries, essentially robbing them of money that they could otherwise receive. So it's important that the trust adhere to certain rules required to be appropriate for an IRA.
Exactly, and that in lies the key. That's why I said it, and that's why Chris picked up on it. A trust to be beneficiary of an IRA has a huge amount of rules. I don't want to turn this show into that. I don't want to do it until Pete gets here. And you cannot use any plain Jane Joe Blow trust that can hold any other asset. And all too often, and I know attorneys don't like to hear this, they're not always right. And you have some well-meaning attorneys who are just clueless on the language that has to be in IRA trusts. And they don't get that an IRA is not like regular assets. It has, as we haven't used the analogy in a while, but Chris did on today's show, I have always called IRAs pig pen. If they're going to be any Peanuts character, I used to say when I put on classes, if your IRA was a Peanuts character, I would say to people at the beginning of the first class, what character would it be and why? And I would just start getting answers from audience members. No one ever would say Pigpen. They always, Charlie Brown, because no one likes it or understands it. I mean, I heard everything. But I would say Pigpen. And then they wouldn't understand, and I would put a photo of Pigpen up on the PowerPoint with that cloud of dust surrounding him. And I said, just pretend Pigpen is your IRA, and that cloud of dust are the rules, regulations, taxes, and penalties that apply to IRAs. No matter where that IRA goes, those rules, taxes, penalties are going to follow that IRA around. And you have to understand what all of them are, or you're going to make big mistakes. And that usually got people to understand, wow, there's a lot more going on here. And unfortunately, in my industry, in the financial planning industry, most advisors don't know what we know. And I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back. I spend a lot of time studying in the Ed Slot program, and we spend a lot of time studying about trusts as IRA beneficiaries. And there's a lot of issues in there. And one thing Ed says is you cannot just create one trust for everything. It doesn't work that way. Now, Pete disagrees with Ed on that. He says a good estate planning attorney can have the proper language in just one document. But I said to Pete before, I said, is it really going to cost anything else to make one trust for the IRA and then another trust for all other assets just to make it easy? And I would rather it be done that way. Pete has admitted it's not that much more work. He admits it. The language has to be in there, whether it's on one document or two. Just has to do another signature page, title page, and trust document page. But Ed Slott always recommends a separate standalone IRA trust because IRAs have taxes, rules, penalties, all sorts of issues that other assets don't. And if the trust is not constructed properly or contains language that is perfectly fine in a non-IRA trust, but you put it in an IRA trust, it will blow that trust to kingdom come. So it's just typical boilerplate language that you would see in non-IRA trusts. You have that language, there is a problem. So you have to recognize these issues. And another issue that most people don't know is the trust deadline. October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. How many people even heard of that? Longtime listeners might. And probably only that woman in Greeley who actually takes notes. Remember we have a woman yeah. who listens to us right. and writes notes down? I guarantee you somewhere in her notes she has written this down. I've talked about it before. One of the issues with a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, if the custodian of the inherited IRA does not receive a copy of that trust by October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death, the IRS will not allow that trust to be beneficiary of the IRA. And you now have a situation where there is no beneficiary and the estate is out there. And an asset that would have passed is now subject to probate, creditors, just a whole host of issues. I would wager dollars to donuts. The vast majority of financial advisors listening to the show never heard of the October 31st trust deadline. Some have, some haven't. I guarantee you most people listening to this have never heard of it. And most beneficiaries inheriting an IRA, especially a minor child, you think the guardian is going to know this stuff? I mean, oh my God, there's a trust here. Let's get a copy of that trust to the custodian by October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. If that isn't delivered to the custodian by that date, doesn't matter if everything else is perfect in the trust. All the language is perfect. The I's are dotted. The T's are crossed. That whole thing blows up because it wasn't delivered by October 31st. So it's these stupid little rules like that can get people in trouble.
It's part of that pig pen cloud.
So you have to, reader, a listener rather, who emailed us, You have to be careful if you name a trust as beneficiary. You've got to make sure your attorney knows what the heck they're doing. And of course the attorney's going to tell you, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And that's the problem I'm going to run into. I don't know, because unless we can read the trust document, it's difficult. And I personally recommend strongly, and it's not just because I study with Ed Slott, but I personally recommend strongly you have one trust that will handle the IRA, and you have another trust that will handle non-IRA assets. And the other thing this man has to recognize, he has two kids. It's best to have one trust for each child for a variety of reasons when you're dealing with IRAs. So you could have one main trust called the master trust that breaks into two sub-trusts at the death of the parents. So you can still do it with one trust, Chris. And it at the death of the two parents, this one trust suddenly gives birth to two sub-trusts. Because he asks in his email, how does he do the beneficiary form? Does he still name the kids, or does he name their trust? Well, what you would do is name the trust on the beneficiary form of the IRAs, not the children. So whatever the trust is. However, you have two children, so you should have two trusts. They're going to grow up differently. It is going to be very easy, far easier for them. What if they grow up and don't get along? What if one of them is married, the other isn't? What if one becomes a drug addict, the other isn't? So you have these competing needs on managing that money. One kid wants the money. One kid wants to do this. The other kid wants to do that. And it can really cause trouble and push the kids apart and be a nightmare for the poor trustee who is trying to handle all this. So you should have one sub-trust for one child, another sub-trust for another child. If you got six kids like Chris, you should have six sub-trusts. But here's the thing. What trust gets named on the beneficiary form? The master trust or the sub-trusts? I know you know the answer. The answer is the sub-trusts, not the master. So you have a master trust that creates the multiple smaller trusts for each child, but each sub-trust has to be named on the beneficiary form and what percent of the IRA each sub-trust is going to receive. So it's these simple things that, again, a lot of people miss and they don't do it right. So as much as I like a trust as beneficiary of an IRA, I like the theory behind it, there's a lot of issues with it, and we'll get into it more on other shows, the tax implications, how this trust should be set up. I just wanted to answer his question. He wanted to know, how does the beneficiary form get made out? And the final thing I want to point out...
Well, one thing, let me say one last thing, that look into these issues, because in my opinion, a poorly created or designed trust is probably worse than no trust at all.
Exactly.
So if you're going to go through, especially if you're going to take on the expense of creating such a thing, make sure it's going to do what you want it to do and that it doesn't have any tremendous negative side effects, because that's really what happens here. If it's poorly designed, it might not work the way you want or might have some tremendous negative side effects, usually in the form of taxes.
And if you're an estate planning attorney, I remember there was a gentleman who came into my office a few months ago for a coffee and a second opinion, Chris, and I started talking to them. They were thinking of creating trust as beneficiary of their IRAs. I started talking to them about a few issues, and the gentleman finally said to me, my attorney's not even talking to me about these issues. And he ended up firing that attorney. He just said, this is on hold. And
if there was no discussion about the uniqueness of an IRA in coordination with a trust, I would be very leery about dealing with that person, especially if you start to raise questions and they dismiss them. That, oh, yeah, no problem. This will handle it. No problem.
This will handle it. No problem. No issue. No, you run into issues all the time. So the one other thing I want to mention in his second paragraph, in his third paragraph, he says, In the will I created, I wanted everything to be liquidated and split into two trusts.
Yeah, red alert.
Red alert was the word liquidated. Yes, exactly. One thing, and he may have just used the wrong verbiage there. You will not be liquidating the IRA and putting it into the trust because that would be 100% taxable. What happens is the IRA is named as beneficiary, excuse me, the trust is named as beneficiary of the IRA by the beneficiary designation form. And what is paid into the trust adjusts the required minimum distributions, the money that has to come out of the IRA. You don't close the entire IRA and put that money into the trust because it would be taxable all in year one. And if it's a sizable IRA with a couple of $100,000, you're talking a massive tax hit. So it is not set up to do that. So hopefully I answered a lot of what this guy wanted to talk about, and it helped, in my opinion, drive home to me that we're going to do another trust show when Pete is here. Mm-hmm. I know one of the first shows we did when he came on the show a little over a year ago was a trust show. We'll do another trust show as trusts, as IRA beneficiaries, and you'll actually hear Pete and I disagree on this show. Because he says one trust can do it all, and I still prefer a standalone IRA trust. Right.
So when we come back from this next break here, we're going to hear the top song, the number one song from this week in 1976. This week's song was almost never released due to its creator's self-described supercritical perfectionist view. So we'll hear what song that is when we return from this break. Thanks for joining us here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Remaining at number one in 1976. This is the Manhattans. What we're hearing here is Kiss and Say Goodbye. Remains at the number one spot for the second week. The song's creator, Winfred Blue Lovett, had severe concerns over the song, which was originally recorded in 1975. Columbia Records also was a bit concerned, so they withheld release of the song for 14 months. Turned out to be a big hit. Hit number one, stayed there for at least a couple weeks because we know it was here last week as well.
And do you want to talk about why we do this? Or do you want me to talk about why we do this?
Well, neither one.
Well, why we do this is to waste time. We have an hour and 43 minutes
to
fill. By
the way, my kids now realize that you really like 1975 because you... The only thing we had to listen to as we're driving to Steamboat Springs when we were out
was my 1975 CD.
Was out of radio range there for the, I don't know, a couple hours in the middle.
AM Gold?
AM Gold 1975.
Some good songs.
Didn't realize how many good songs there were in 1975. There's lots of good stuff on there.
Yeah. Did your kids like it?
Some did, some didn't.
For those who don't know, Chris borrowed my truck to go camping. And I did have an old CD in there that was AM Gold, the Time Life music series. For some reason, 1975 has been stuck in my car for a while.
It did its job.
It did its job.
Because it's a very long CD. There's like 22 tracks on there.
Yeah, so it goes a lot of songs from 1975.
A lot of songs from 1975, yeah.
But some good hits. I'm sure you were humming along to some of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we at the towards the end there, we had the whole car singing at the top of their lungs, Rhinestone Cowboy.
I like Glenn Campbell, so. Rhinestone Cowboy. Mm-hmm. That's a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. I remember that growing up. Good sing-along song.
Yes.
Like a Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yep.
Yep, very good. Okay,
it's
so.
It's funnier when you have 15-year-olds.
Singing it.
Singing it, yeah.
Not 40-year-olds.
Yeah. I'll laugh. It's kind of funny when you do it, too, but not quite as funny as a carload of kids.
Okay, so why do we do all this? Well, we began with a song from 1935, which is the year Social Security was created. Then we followed up with the number one song in America 40 years ago, which was the Let's Just Kiss and Say Goodbye song Chris was just talking about. Why do we do that 40 years ago? Well, when Social Security was first created, the calculation to determine your benefits was based on a number they called 40 elapsed years. So that's why we look back 40 years ago. Beginning in the 1950s, the calculation changed. It was a planned change. It wasn't a rule change. They had it planned all along for this to happen. And they started looking at what they called 35 computation years. And that's how they determine your Social Security today, is look at your 35 computation years or your highest 35 years of earnings. So that's why in the next segment, we're going to lead into the number one song in America, 35 years ago. The whole reason we do this and tie it into Social Security is Chris and I run a blog post called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. I started the blog post, and over the past 9 months, Chris has pretty much been doing all the blogging, although I do have some good ideas for blogs, so I may record a few with you again, just like old times.
Very nice.
But Chris pretty much runs Social Security. He is by far the go-to guy in the office. There's nobody that I know personally and professionally who knows as much about Social Security as Chris does. I counsel with him all the time. So from that, I'm very grateful. He's self-taught himself all of this, and he does a wonderful job. So we're going to lead in next segment with the number one song in America 35 years ago, and then give a summary update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And that's why we do all this fun things with music. And it does break up a rather, if we just talked financial planning and retirement planning and investment management for an hour and 43 minutes, I think we'd bore a lot of people. So we kind of
spice it up. Well,
if
that's all we talked about, it would be about 23 minutes of show.
Oh, no, I could talk about that for an hour and 43 minutes.
I'm saying without all the bantering.
Oh. Well, we don't banter nearly as much as we used to. Some of our iTunians used to go crazy, bat crazy, because the amount of bantering we did. But we're becoming a little less bantering. Okay, so what are we going to do for the next hour or the next two segments?
Well, the second topic I mentioned at the very top of the show,
exactly.
Which are six IRA rules every bride and groom must know, or bride and bride, or groom and groom.
Or bride, groom, bride.
I don't think we've gotten to that point yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
There will be a court case sooner or later. Okay, so what we're going to talk about is a few of the unique things that happen to people when they get married as far as their IRA goes. We know there's a lot of things that happen when you get married, but a lot of people don't look at the retirement aspects, the retirement planning or the IRA rule aspects.
Or more generally, just the financial aspects of getting married. We've all caught up in the cohabitation issues and how we're going to get along and we love each other so much and all that stuff. But there can be financial consequences, both good and bad,
exactly,
to marriage.
So we want to start pointing out some of the things to watch out for. And the first part, and I'm going to give the Ed Slot Group kudos for this. They're the ones who put this list together. But in a pinch, they always come up with great ideas for our radio show. So these six rules for every bride and groom must know. And the first rule was spousal contributions. And this is a very, very, very good point. Mm-hmm. And in order to contribute to an IRA, you need to have earnings, do you not?
Mm-hmm. Earned income.
And what is earned income?
That's wages from work, essentially.
Exactly, W-2 wages.
Yeah, so it can't be income like interest income or dividend income or rental income. It has to be what you'd consider more traditionally as earnings from work being done.
Exactly. So let's just say you have a person. We'll call him Chris. hypothetical. Or do you want me to use the names that Ed used?
How about Randy?
Okay, so you want to use the names that Ed used. Okay. Yeah. So we have a guy.
I don't care.
We have a guy named Randy. Mm-hmm. Randy is not working in 2016. Mm-hmm. So can he put money into an IRA?
Not if he's single.
Not if he's single. And Randy right now in a hypothetical story is single. So you have a single guy wants to put money in an IRA, whether it's a traditional or a Roth, doesn't matter, wants to put money in, but doesn't have a job. So he has two choices if he wants to get money into an IRA. He could, A, go get a job. Mm-hmm. Or B, go get married to someone who has a job.
Perfect.
So in our sample, Randy decides A isn't good. He don't want to work. Mm-hmm. So he goes out and finds a woman,
mm-hmm. Rita.
Or a man nowadays, and he marries that person.
Rita.
In our example, we'll call his wife Rita. And lovely Rita is a Mita maid.
What? That's not in the story.
No, but I can give her a job. So she's a Mita maid. Lovely Rita is a Mita maid. And she
is her real name Rita, and you're really pronouncing it Rita, or because meter, you're pronouncing Mita.
So
is her name
about?
Rita?
Rita is a Mita maid. Did you hear that song by the Beatles? Lovely Rita, Rita, Mita maid.
That's not one I recall.
Something like that.
I'm sure if I heard it, I'd remember it, but I don't. It's not coming to mind.
You never heard the Mita maid song by the Beatles?
I probably have. I don't remember it at all, though.
You serious?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Beatles fan.
Oh, we're going to have to look that up. I don't know the name of the song. It might be Rita Mita Maid.
Do they pronounce it like you do?
No, they have it. They do an English accent. Oh, that's a Boston accent.
Okay,
I can't do that with
it. Because Rita only rhymes with Mita if you're from Boston.
Or if you're English, because it rhymes in the Beatles song.
Do they mispronounce R's and...
I don't know. We'll have to listen to that song.
Well, I'll look it up while you're talking about what happens. The beneficial point.
So what happens?
Randy wins on this deal.
Randy wins. He could either A, get a job, and as long as he, let's just say he's over the age of 50, Randy could get a job, earn at least $6,500 in W-2 salary, and be able to put money into an IRA. He could put up to $6,500 in. That's the maximum you're allowed to contribute if you're over the age of 50. Or he could stay unemployed and just marry someone who has a job. And as long as that person earns more than the statutory maximum amount, which is $6,500, so if the wife earns $6,500 or more, Randy could put $6,500 in a spousal IRA. That's not a special IRA, folks. You can't go and say, I'm going to open a spousal IRA. You're going to open a traditional IRA, but the contribution is going to be based on your spousal's income. So they call that a spousal IRA. So that's one of the things to bear in mind. And it doesn't matter when the marriage happens. It could happen January 1st or December 31st. As long as they are married by the end of the year, Randy would be entitled to make a contribution for this year. And longtime listeners will know, Randy, in our example, actually has until April 15th of the following year to put money in his IRA and call it a 2016 contribution.
But they don't retroactively count marriage. So they have to be married by the end of 2016.
Yes, exactly. He can't get married in January of 2017. That will not work. So Randy could either get a job or get married, and he can put money into an IRA. So there is one, not, I wouldn't say an issue, but one consideration that a bride or a groom should know.
I found it. Oh, they do say it just
they
like
do
Bostonians.
Say it just like I say it. Mita, May.
I haven't heard that one much. I have heard it before, but that's not the top of my Beatles playlist, if I had one.
And they pronounce it the correct way, so...
The correct way.
What do you mean? What are you laughing at? They said the same thing.
I don't think
thing.
Anyone points to the Beatles as a how we should speak, unless you're from Liverpool.
Well, I think that was John Lennon singing, and I think he did a fine job. And he said, Mita, the you, way Mita is
you understood
is
exactly what they were saying.
I did.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the second rule every bride and groom must know, Roth IRA contributions. Mm-hmm. And what do we mean by that?
Well, there are some restrictions on making Roth IRA contributions. Unlike a traditional IRA, where you can put money into a traditional IRA no matter how much you earn, which people always are shocked when we mention that, because people have drummed into their head that there's some limitation there. There is no limit on earnings to put money in a traditional IRA. Where the limit comes in is being able to deduct that contribution to the IRA. There are restrictions there. A Roth, though, there are limits for both single people and married people. Ability to put money in a Roth IRA at all, you're prevented if you make over a certain amount. If you're single, that amount starts at $117,000 is where the phase out, what we call a phase out, begins. There's not a hard wall where when you hit it, the contribution ability goes to zero. They phase it out over an income range. And for a single person, that range is $117,000 to $132,000. Once you get to $132,000 as a single person, you cannot put a dime into a Roth IRA. For married filing joint, that phase-out range is $184,000 to $194,000. And then married filing separate, forget about it, pretty much.
Zero because, to $10,000.
Because at $10,000... Right.
They're on to that trick. So what, yeah. What Chris is trying to show you here... Now, let's just take our lovely Mita maid wife, and let's just say she's making $100,000. Mm-hmm. And let's say Randy wasn't the deadbeat that he was in our first example. Randy was also making $100,000.
Maybe he's independently wealthy. He's not just deadbeat.
All right, well,
Have a job.
Let's just say Randy does have a job now, and he earns $100,000. Mm-hmm. So both Rita and Randy earn $100,000. Mm-hmm. As single people, they will be able to contribute to Roth IRAs.
Fully, to the limit right now, which is $5,500. If you're under the age of 50 or 50 or over $6,500, they would not be restricted in any way if they remained single and wanted to contribute to a Roth.
So they do, because today is August 2nd, and they are not married. So Rita and Randy each contribute, let's just say they're over the age of 50, each contribute $6,500 to their respective Roth IRAs. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. Everything is perfect until... For some odd, strange reason, they decide they want to get married. Mm-hmm. So they go and get married in September.
Uh-oh
is right. Because it doesn't matter that they contributed while they were single. What matters is their tax filing status on December 31st. So on December 31st, they will be married. If they file married separate, well, it blows up because they can't earn more than $10,000. So if they file married joint, they are limited to $184,000 as the maximum amount of income before the phase outs begin. And after $194,000, they cannot contribute to a Roth IRA. So now they file the married joint tax return the following year, because they get married in September of this year. So next year they file a married joint tax return, but no one ever tells them those you now earn, merely because you have married, you now earn more than the limits. Combined, you guys are earning $200,000 and the limit is $194,000. So neither one of them are eligible to put money into an IRA. And that could come back and bite them in their little hinies. Because if they don't take that money out by October 15th of the following year, it will be considered an excess contribution subject to a 6% penalty every year that it stays in the IRA. So when they get married, they would have to remove those contributions. They can recharacterize them to a IRA contribution, a non-deductible IRA contribution, because with $200,000, they won't be able to contribute to a deductible IRA as a married couple, but they could recharacterize it as a traditional IRA, or they can remove it as a removal of excess contribution. They have to remove their money plus any earnings. They will owe taxes and penalties on the earnings, penalties if they're under the age of 59 and a half, but they will owe taxes on the earnings, but they have to remove it. So a lot of people don't realize that, Chris, that they may have been eligible to put money in a Roth IRA, but now because they married, they can't. And it could be a situation that any earnings attributable to that contribution would be taxable to them, even though they've taken it out of a Roth IRA, which is traditionally tax-free. So this is a gotcha that a lot of people don't know and they got to watch out for.
Hopefully not too many people fall victim to that, because that's kind of a sneaky one. And the thing is, the IRS usually doesn't catch this for a few years, so that 6% penalty per year has stacked up, piled up, before they actually notify you. And I don't know if they don't do it on purpose, but that's another side effect gotcha for the IRS. They move so slowly in catching these things that any annual penalties can really snowball on you by the time they let you know.
And one odd thing, Chris and I have talked about this in the past. We'll talk about it again, only because it's one of these little things that hardly anybody ever knows. Remember, they have to remove that excess contribution by October 15th of the year following. So if they each contributed in 2016, got married in 2016, they have until October 15th of 2017 to remove the excess contribution and not face the 6% penalty tax. They have to remove the entire excess amount. So in our example, that would be $6,500 each from each IRA, or $13,000 in total, plus any associated gains. Let's just say, for sake of extreme example, they were really big-time day traders, and they had this really amazing hot stock that was trading at $1 a share. Now, compliance people listening to this, Chris and I are totally making this up. This is just an extreme example. So they now have 13,000 shares of this stock in their Roth IRAs. And by October of the following year, they realize, oh my God, we were not allowed to do this. And let's just say the stock is now up to $5 a share. So they've got a heck of a lot of gain. What's 4 times 13,000?
They've got $52,000 worth of gain.
So that's a pretty serious gain they have in their Roth that should be, what, 100% tax-free?
Tax-free.
However, they were not allowed to, and the IRS says by October 15th, you have to take out your contribution plus any associated gain or face a 6% penalty on the excess contribution. If you were their advisor and they came into you and it's October 10th, what would you tell them?
Well, they need to take that $13,000 out. But the gain, they should leave in there, because a little side effect, this is, you could call this a loophole, really. You aren't technically required to take the gain out. You're going to pay the penalty.
But you have to wait till October 16th.
Right.
After October 15th, the rule changes. We can't figure out this rule. Natalie Cho is the one, and this is her example. Yep. She talks about someone putting $100,000 in, and it just rises through the roof. The rule says, as Chris alluded to, after October 15th, you don't have to take the gain out. It's insanity, but that's the rule. You still got to take the $6,000 out, but because they missed the October 15th deadline, they got to pay a 6% penalty tax on $13,000. By paying a 6% penalty tax on $13,000, they get to leave $52,000 in the Roth IRA 100% tax-free.
As long as they leave it there.
As long as they leave it there.
Right.
So what they do is on October 16th, they remove the $13,000. They pay one 6% penalty, and that's it. So they pay a 6% penalty on the $13,000, but in our example, they got $52,000 of tax-free money sitting there. To this day, I don't know why the rule that says you have to remove the interest goes away after October 15th.
It is a little bizarre.
And Natalie, I got to ask her why they have that. There's got to be a reason. I mean, somewhere along the line they thought of it, or this is just a glaring loophole they forgot to remove out.
Right.
But every time I hear those who don't know, Natalie Choate is right. She's like the female Ed Slott without the marketing.
I mean, and she comes out from a little different standpoint.
Yes.
She's an attorney.
Yes. Ed's a CPA.
Ed's a CPA. So they come at this from a little different background, but they both kind of have committed their lives, their professional lives, to being experts on IRAs and the cloud, the pig pen cloud that surrounds those IRAs.
Right. So Natalie, this is her example, and it's a very telling strategy. So again, if you do find yourself subject to a excess contribution, know these rules, because if that contribution just happened to luck out and buy something that has just increased tremendously in value, it may be worth paying the 6% penalty after October 15th of the year following the excess contribution, and then you're allowed to leave all the earnings in there 100% tax-free.
Yep.
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tax-free is good.
Yeah, tax-free. Last time I noticed, tax-free is good.
So the third on our list.
Do we have time, or is...
Yeah, we have... Well, you can... Maybe not.
Okay.
We have 2 minutes.
Yeah. So the next one is deducting traditional, excuse me, IRA contributions. As Chris alluded to, anybody can contribute to a non-deductible IRA irrespective of your earnings. However, if you have a traditional IRA and you want to put money in and deduct it on your taxes, you can only do so up to a certain amount of earnings. And if you earn too much, you're not going to be able to deduct it. So I think people can see where we're going with this, and I'll get into it more when we return at the fourth segment. And then we're also going to get into the tip or trick number four, or no, not tip and trick, but the IRA strategy rules, rather, that every bride and groom must know, and that is penalty-free distributions to help your new spouse. This was a unique thing that Ed pointed out. So we're going to get into that, and then we're going to get into how your RMDs may actually go down if you get married. A lot of people don't realize that, so we'll talk about that.
Depends on who you marry.
It depends who you marry, exactly.
So when we come back, we are going to hear the number one song this week in 1981 as we look back 35 years in connection to the 35 computational years in your Social Security retirement benefit calculation. The name used in this song title for this week's number one hit was inspired by the football jersey worn by the song's composer. Whose name was on that jersey? Well, the hint is it's an NFL wide receiver that played for the Detroit Lions, LA Rams, and the Buffalo Bills, and he had his best season with the Rams in 1976, where he was elected to the Pro Bowl. That would be a hint for a football junkie.
Yes.
There.
That's quite the hint.
That's quite the hint. Cena went above and beyond on that hint. So we'll find out what song this is and how it connects to a football jersey when we come back from this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed. It ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I want to make her mine. And she's watching.
Well, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Retirement and IRA Show. That, of course, is Rick Springfield with Jesse's Girl. So Springfield decided on the name Jesse because he was wearing a Ron Jesse football jersey at the time he was composing the song. So that's quite the little trivia nugget there. I had no idea. I figured Jesse was a friend of Rick's in real life.
So Rick was the football player?
No, Rick Springfield was the composer. And the singer, in this case, he was wearing a football jersey of Ron Jesse. Jesse was the guy's last name.
Oh, so it's his girlfriend he wanted. Because remember the last hint, he wrote this because he wanted his girlfriend's...
Yeah, but his friend wasn't named Jesse. His friend was Gary or something like that. So he changed the name
to Jesse because
to
of
Jesse
the receiver.
Because he was using. He just looked around. Right. He was like, I've seen pictures of
Rick Springfield. Wasn't that big of a guy. He doesn't want to steal some football girlfriend.
Back then, he was like 110 pounds soaking wet.
Yes, yeah, so you don't want to steal a football player's girlfriend at that size.
You know who else very slight was John Bon Jovi. I saw him live and he wandered through the crowd real close and he was like very, very slight, small person. Kind of surprised me.
Okay, much more successful than either you or I.
Yes,
so
both with
height has
women
gotten
and,
neither
and,
one of us
yeah,
anywhere.
No, true, true. He had a lot more hair than I did too.
Yeah, he did have that '80s hair thing going, pretty darn good. Today he doesn't have quite the thick, lustrous hair that he used to have.
Are we talking about Rick now or John?
No, John. But he's always on TV because he's really good friends with John Elway, and you always see John Bon Jovi with the Broncos.
You do?
Yeah.
I didn't. I've never seen that.
I have.
Okay. Really? Doing what? Singing
just
at their practices? And
standing
stuff?
There.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Well, he's good friends with Elway because, you know, he used to own that indoor league football team that went under.
Oh, yeah. They both were owners in that league, weren't they?
I know he was. I don't know if Elway was.
Yeah. No, Elway. Yeah. Got it. That makes sense.
Okay.
So, where does that bring us?
What's new on Help with MySocialSecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
Well, I feel extraordinarily unprepared.
And that's why you're looking it up right now?
Because I...
You just remembered now to look this up.
No idea what this week's... post is on
so why did you start recording? See, this is live recorded radio, folks. We're not doing any takes
in preparation for.
Chris knew he didn't know what he was talking about.
No,
but he still recorded.
In preparation for going on vacation this past week, I got the post ready earlier than normal, and early enough where I completely forgot what the heck.
But what I'm saying is you're doing this on live recorded radio. We're not stopping and editing out the fact that you're a fool.
We might have to.
We're going to edit out the fact that you're a fool?
Okay. Well,
you got it?
No, I got it. So on this week, on Help with MySocialSecurity.com, our fabulous Social Security blog, is a blog about the benefit reduction for claiming early. So I've been getting quite a few email questions that are related to the effects of claiming before one's full retirement age, which for most people listening to this show that are on the verge of retiring, that age is 66, that in the next couple of years here, it's going to start to gradually increase to 67 for those people born in 1955 and after. There are some consequences, as most people understand. They maybe have heard or just get the fact that they're going to have reduced benefits if they claim before that, but they're not sure exactly how much it's reduced. And is that reduction permanent? And what are the things that could offset that reduction? And those types of issues. So I clarify, what are the effects of claiming your benefit early? Any questions?
Nope. Perfect.
What's new, pussycat?
See, I eventually recovered.
You were unprepared, though.
I will admit, I was substantially unprepared for that segment.
And you knew it because you're the one playing the song.
I'm over here. All you have to do is sit there and talk. I'm here running the computer and the recorder and the thing and the papers and
but
all
your
this.
Mind
listening
can't
to
think
what,
that
listening
far into
to what
the
you're
future?
Saying because at any moment you might call for my input.
Okay, well, you recouped. I don't think the audience noticed at all that you were unprepared.
Perfect. So we need to hurry if we're going
to
get through all six
of
these.
Okay,
so deducting traditional IRA contributions. I mentioned before, anyone can contribute to a traditional IRA, regardless of income. The question becomes, can you deduct it on your current year's taxes? Well, if you are, there's two effects here. There's two things that have to happen. You have to be an active participant in a retirement plan at work, or your spouse is an active participant in your IRA at work, at their work, you then fall victim to limits on income where you will be unable to deduct the contribution to your traditional IRA. If you're a single person and aren't an active participant in your retirement plan at work, you actually can deduct contributions to your traditional IRA regardless of your income. But as soon as you're, most people who have substantial income work somewhere where they're maybe have a 401k or something similar at work, if you're an active participant in such a thing, then they limit your income in regards to your ability to deduct the contribution to your traditional IRA.
So you can run into the same problem that you ran into in the Roth IRA example we gave. So you have to watch out when you get married. You got to start looking at your total income, not your pre-marriage income.
And which of the two of you are active participants? Before,
exactly.
Maybe you aren't an active participant. Maybe you work somewhere where they don't have a retirement plan and you make a boatload of money. You make a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. You can contribute to a traditional IRA and deduct it.
But not when you get married.
But when you marry them, marry someone, if they now are active participants in their retirement plan, you still are not, you still then get sucked into this limitation on income.
It's a very high limit, but you can run into that problem.
Yep.
Okay, the other thing that we wanted to talk about, which was a unique approach, the ability to take penalty-free distributions to help a spouse. So people know if you're under the age of 59 and a half and you take money out of a retirement account, you generally will pay a 10% penalty on top of any income taxes that are owed on that distribution. However, there are certain exemptions to the 10% penalty. That would be a good show, to do a show on the exemptions.
We haven't
talked
about that for a while. We have done a show like that
in the past,
many years ago.
But it'd be time to do another one. Mm-hmm. Because some of the rules are the same for IRAs and 401ks. Others are different. Mm-hmm. There are things that are only allowed from a 401k and other things that are only allowed from an IRA and things that are allowed from both.
So by the way, there's no such thing as a loan from your IRA.
Correct. So we will talk about that on another show. But what we were getting at in this is, let's just say you are under the age of 59 and a half and you are dating a woman, and this woman wants to go back to school, and you, in an effort to impress said woman, offered to pay some of the tuition.
Mm-hmm.
But all your money is in an IRA. So now you're going to be faced with, let's just say you want to give her $10,000 for her tuition. So now you're being faced with having to take $10,000 out, pay a 10% penalty on that, or $1,000, and give her now just $9,000, but the woman wants $10,000. So now you got to take out a little over $11,000 to be able to pay the 10% penalty plus income taxes to give her the money. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to avoid that headache, which can be a headache filling in all those forms, just marry her.
Mm-hmm.
There's no headaches with marriage. It would be blissful. So you just marry her.
Coming from
her.
The mouth of a single person.
You just marry her. Because now if you are married, you are allowed to take money out of your IRA without a 10% penalty to cover the tuition of you or your spouse or your children.
Mm-hmm.
You can also do the same thing for deductible medical expenses. Now, that's deductible medical expenses, not any medical expense. And there's rules on which expenses are deductible and how much and what percent of your AGI and all this other things we don't want to get into on today's show. But you could, if you wanted to pay the education expenses for someone and save the 10% penalty, just marry them. And then you can save the 10% penalty. You got other headaches you'll have to deal with, but you wouldn't have to deal with that one.
There's a benefit. Some of these other ones have been kind of warnings. Bad thing might happen.
This one's a little bit of a benefit.
There's maybe a positive.
Another positive, mm-hmm. You could get smaller required minimum distributions.
Maybe.
Depends who you marry. So mm-hmm. What are we getting at on that? Well,
you have to marry someone named Sue.
Well, you don't have to.
Oh.
But you just have to marry someone more than 10 years younger than you. Because a required minimum distribution is the money that you are forced to take out of retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, 457, TSP, whatever retirement account you happen to belong to, they all have very, very similar required minimum distribution rules that state in the year you turn 70 and a half, you must begin taking a certain amount of money from your IRA every year or face a 50% penalty tax. The amount you have to remove begins at about 3.7% and increases every year from there. It's a whole calculation. We've talked about it on previous shows. However, the standard rule that the IRS assumes is that everybody marries someone exactly 10 years their junior. So the calculation is based on you and the life expectancy of someone 10 years younger than you. However, there is a special rule that if you marry someone more than 10 years younger than you, so if you're dating somebody who's 12, 13, 14, 15 years younger than you, and you marry them, your required minimum distribution will be smaller. And how much smaller is going to depend on how much younger that person is than you. Is that person 10 years in a day, or is that person 20 or 25 or 30 years younger than you? And there's a special calculation, a chart rather, table we would go to. We wouldn't go to the uniform lifetime table, which is how we determine the RMDs for most people. What we have to go through is the joint lifetime table, which is a very big table, multiple pages on this, because it has
Combination,
thank you, under the sun. I mean, goes all the way to marrying a teenager. So you can go to all these different ages and you put your finger on your age and your other finger on your spouse's age and you move them across this table and where it touches, that's the required minimum distribution for that year based on both life expectancies. And of course, the younger the person is, the lower your RMD because you get to use their life expectancy, which is a lot longer than yours because they're so much younger. So there could be a benefit by marrying someone younger than you. You get lower RMDs.
Maybe lower medical expenses too because they're younger. Older people usually have higher medical expenses.
Well, it's not going to lower your medical expenses. It'll lower theirs.
But if they're your spouse, you're responsible for those too.
Oh, well, okay.
Okay. Just throwing it out there.
That's a positive.
Maybe that's why people look for younger people to marry. They're thinking of these things.
Could very well be.
Maybe.
Who's younger, you or Melissa?
Melissa?
You have to think about it?
No.
You didn't know?
I was wondering how to answer this. She's slightly younger, not much.
Okay. What do you mean you think?
Not enough to use the joint life table.
Okay.
No.
Well, you could divorce her and marry someone younger to save on RMDs.
Yeah. That would be one tiny speck in the positive category with huge negatives in the other category.
Well, yeah, it's cheaper to keep them, as they say, especially with six kids.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the six...
I'd like to keep her anyway, just
for the
record.
I know you would. You're very happy together.
Very happy.
I'm jealous.
Mm-hmm. You should be.
You should be. I wanted you for myself.
That took a weird twist, but thankfully we've gotten to the sixth... thing to consider with all brides, potential bride and grooms. Well, are they a bride before they get married? Bride to be. This really should be things to consider the bride and groom to be, because once you've married, you're in it. There, you just have to take it.
You're in it to win it.
You're in it. You've made the decision. I think this really should be six rules to consider prior to marriage.
Yeah, it should be six IRA rules every bride and groom to be must know.
Yeah, I'll call Ed and get him to
Ed to change that.
Your spousal beneficiary options. And this actually might lead into a seventh issue that I'll point out. So I'm going to add one to his list here. So why don't you want to talk about this one?
Are you sure you want to undercut Ed's slot?
No, I'm not undercutting. I'm adding. I'm embellishing. Frosting on the cake, as
if
it
Ed
will.
Says there's six. There's not seven.
No, there's seven.
There's six.
There's seven.
All right, well, I'm going to rush through this one because I want to see what you came up with.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so spousal beneficiary options. What are we getting at there? It's not just the fact that if you marry somebody, you possibly could get lower RMDs if this person you are marrying is more than 10 years younger than you. That person themselves, your spouse, your new person you married. Let's just say, let's go back to our lovely Rita, meet a maid example. So we have Rita And what was this guy's name? Rick? Randy?
Randy or something.
All right. So we have Randy and Rita.
Raul?
No, it wasn't Raul. I remember Raul.
Roberto?
No.
I think Randy. It was Randy. It was Randy.
Okay. So we have Randy and Rita. If they're not married and Randy wants to give Rita his IRA at his passing, he names her as beneficiary. And because they're not married, they're considered a non-spouse beneficiary, and Rita must begin taking distributions from that IRA by December 31st of the year following Randy's passing. Mm-hmm. Even if Rita is young, maybe she's only in her 20s, she has to begin taking distributions. You would go to what is called the single life table. The IRS would show you what your remaining life expectancy is, not in the year. So let's just say when she inherits Randy's IRA, she's 25. The following year, she's 26, so she goes to the single life table, looks up the life expectancy of a 26-year-old, which Chris will do while I'm talking.
Whoa, I'll do what?
Find out the single life table for a 26-year-old. I can get it. It's in my iPad. But that means I'm going to have to talk and look at my iPad at the same time.
Well, you can talk, and how about if you could look that up when I'm giving you number 7 that should have been
That's
in
true.
Its
okay.
list.
Okay, so what happens now, because Rita is not the spouse, she must begin taking required minimum distributions from her IRA. Now, the reason, even though he died when she was 25, the following year when she has to take required minimum distributions, she's 26. So that's why we always look at the age in the year after death.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, because I just looked it up, I'm that good, 57.2. So the IRS feels a 26-year-old will live for another 57.2 years.
On average.
On average. So what she has to do is begin dividing the IRA balance by 57.2. The following year, she divides it by 56.2. The year after that, 55.2, and so on and so forth. I'm not going to go through all these numbers.
So in that first year, she has to take about 1.75% of the balance
out. Now, it would be different. Let's just say they are older. Let's say they were 65 years old. She wasn't 25. She was 65. And now the following year, she's 66. Now the divisor is 20.2. Not 57.2. So you can see a substantially larger RMD must begin because she wasn't married to Randy. All of this is a moot point if she married Randy. If she is his spouse, when she inherits the IRA, she can treat the IRA as her own. So as a 25-year-old, in my first example, Randy's IRA, and let's just say it had $500,000 in it, Randy's IRA passes to this lovely 25-year-old widower. She turns it into her own. She just changes. It's just her own. She removes it from his, rolls it or transfers it into her own IRA in her name, and a 25-year-old, as you know, folks, has no required minimum distributions. She can let that sit in there all the way until turning 70 and a half, and it can continue to grow with no RMDs. Now, in the second example, she inherits it at 65 years old, but the same thing works. Because she's married to him, she doesn't have to begin taking distributions. She can turn that into her own IRA and for another 5.5 years, allow that IRA to be deferred. And then when she is 70 and a half, begins taking RMDs under her life expectancy table, the uniform lifetime table she can use. And that would be a 3.7% distribution in 5 years, not what amounts to almost a 6% distribution under the other rules. So you can see spouses get far more favorable treatment than non-spouses. So a deathbed marriage could be in the works for some people. Okay. So what is this seventh issue that Ed didn't think of?
Number 7 in the 6 IRA rules every bride and groom should know. Beneficiaries don't automatically change when you marry. So this is more of a warning. Unlike a 401k, which has ERISA protection, and the spouse, when you become the spouse, you will gain certain rights to receive that in the instance of a person's death. within 1 year of being married. That will happen. IRAs are not like that. So if you marry someone and their ex-spouse is still named as the beneficiary of the IRA, the fact that you're married does not change that. And you could be married for quite a long time. Your spouse passes away, and the ex-spouse from years ago will receive the IRA instead of you.
Unless you're in a community property state, the rules are a little bit different in those
states. We usually
talk
about things from a Colorado perspective. We're not a community property state. But
that is true. I'll give you that.
That's something I think.
I'm sure Ed knew that.
That's a big alert, I think. You know, you kind of just assume by being the spouse, you gain these certain rights to inherit the assets of your spouse. Because an IRA passes by this beneficiary designation by right of contract. This is a contract between the IRA holder and the custodian of the IRA. The IRA holder tells the custodian what is to happen to this account upon their passing. And if they leave it attached to maybe their brother or sister or to their ex-spouse or whoever else was on there, the fact that you marry them does not change that automatically. So I would make sure that as part of the, maybe after the night of festivities of the wedding, maybe the next day, we'll call it post-coital paperwork, you can have a discussion about updating your beneficiary designation forms.
That's a good point, and we can take this to the other extreme, too, with a 401k. This was IRAs. But in the case of a 401k, you have to watch out in blended families. We talk about this all the time. If you are both single, if lovely Rita Mita Maid is single and has two kids, and Randy is single and has two kids, and they both have 401ks, and they named their two kids as beneficiary of their 401ks, which is what most single people would do, they think that is a wonderful thing. Then they fall in love and for some odd reason decide to get married. So now they are married together and they're probably still sitting there thinking, gee, my IRA is going to go to my 401k is going to go to my kids. We're all set. No. In that case, ERISA says the spouse will be beneficiary of all 401ks in a period of time not to exceed 1 year after marriage. And the 401k, we talked about this before, can set their own rules. It can be immediate or up to 1 year. And children, in the case of blended families, are often disinherited, Chris, because of this. So there's another thing to look out for when you get married.
Yep. So thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. If you have any questions, please get a hold of us at jimhelps.com. You can go to the website there. There's a variety of ways to contact us from there. Next week will be another pre-recorded show, I believe, with the physician that Jim talked about. So we'll be back with you then on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.